So Trump has now been ensconced into the Electoral College against all popular opinion and in the face of critics from across the gamut and of every political, religious, and social caste. Congratulations, Mr. Trump. The moment is sweet for his backers, and yet we see now why it is such an important moment for the fate of this country as political correctness swirls around us, threatening to take down this still once proud land. An example is what is now happening in college sports, where team after team is suddenly being suspended for violation of various social codes. Four teams, some of them Ivies, have been shut down, including teams from Harvard and Washington University in St. Louis. They have suspended their men's soccer team indefinitely while it investigates allegations that the 2015 team kept an online document of degrading and sexually explicit comments towards women. The university made the announcement late Friday night, 2 days after members of the school's women's soccer team raised concerns over the alleged inappropriate behavior. Quote, "We are saddened and deeply troubled by these allegations and are taking them very seriously," Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs Lori S. White said in her statement. "Let me be clear. There is absolutely no place at Washington University for sexism, discrimination, or harassment of any kind. This alleged behavior flies in the face of the university's core values of community support, diversity, and inclusion, and we are firmly committed to conducting a timely and thorough investigation to address this matter." But Ms. Lori S. White, Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, why not use a Christian honor code instead in this soaked, promiscuous, and highly perverse society? Why political correctness? Why does it have to be PC? In short, we will either slay this PC beast or it will devour us. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas, by the way, Miss White. Good morning. It is 6:08, and today is the 20th, of course, and we're getting inching closer and closer to the big day. And I'm trying to get you so a little bit of temperature here, but I am concerned about these teams that are getting shut down. 36 degrees right now, by the way. I'm concerned about these stories. It's story after story of how this political correctness beast is still gaining in strength. And I mean, it's obvious. It is so ridiculous, some of the stuff they're coming up. This is probably one of the most perverted societies in history. So they're not doing anything to make it less perverted. What they're basically saying in these suspensions is that we have a standard for you that you have to follow. And I mean, if these people really wanted to get rid of sexism or whatever else they talked about, they would just cancel all sports, because sports are famous for college sports, and sports in general are famous for insensitive statements. I mean, they're trying to purify these teams, and they're trying to purify the NFL, right? But at the same time, the NFL is going out of its way to be inclusive for gay marriage, and you know, no person in the NFL can make a slur or make a comment about homosexuality. So who is calling the shots on what's acceptable and what's not? I mean, if you're going to ask for a pure standard, then ask for a pure standard. But if it's political correctness that is calling the shots, then there's not going to be any purity in it whatsoever. There's just going to be highly biased and frankly contradictory notions about what's acceptable and what's not. Now, all right, let's get into the Electoral College a little bit. We'll come back to this this thing. But they're talking about also Title IX, the U.S. Code Title IX being used to create a completely, there's an article by Glenn Reynolds, Title IX is a bureaucratic sex creep gone wild. So we'll get into that. But first, let's let us honor our Electoral College results. And you know what's funny, which I could have probably predicted? More people bailed on Hillary. More people bailed on Hillary than did the Donald. Isn't that fitting? So who are they going to sue? Who are they going to attack for doing that? And there was a, I got to tell you about this too. Washington State cast 8 electoral votes for Hillary Clinton, 3 for Colin Powell for some reason, and 1 for Faith the Spotted Eagle, which is, I must take my hat off to Faith the Spotted Eagle. Maybe there's a place in the Donald's cabinet for in the military. But here is the Electoral College results.
Politics. In an election season unlike any other, it's hardly surprising that one of the most routine elements of this process would also be interesting. Democrats, still stunned over the come-from-ahead loss by Hillary Clinton, had one last slim hope against Donald Trump in the very thing they despise, the Electoral College. It was never to be, and by late afternoon, official word that Donald Trump had officially surpassed the necessary 270 electoral votes needed to win the presidency officially and become the 45th president on January 20th. We have Fox Team coverage. Peter Ducey's at the Trump compound in Palm Beach, Florida, where the president-elect is continuing the transition process. But we begin with Chief Washington Correspondent James Rosen and where the Electoral College voting stands right now. Good evening, James.
Brett, good evening. Two faithless electors in Texas cast votes against Donald Trump in the Electoral College today, but it was the Lone Star State that put the president-elect and the vice president-elect over the top. Around 200 protesters in Harrisburg braved freezing temperatures and tall odds in their quest to deprive President-elect Trump of the 270 electoral votes he needed to advance to his inauguration next month.
I'm here today because I feel like it's the last chance we have to really save this country.
Inside the state capitol, however, amid some jeering, Pennsylvania's 20 electors dutifully cast their ballots for the Republican who last month flipped their usually blue state to red.
That the vote for President of the United States was 20 votes for Donald J. Trump, and the vote for Vice President for the United States, 20 votes for Michael R. Pence.
And so it was around the country, with small protests in each of the 50 state capitals doing little to slow the Trump juggernaut. Of the first 10 states he won that participated in the Electoral College balloting, none witnessed any defections. Indeed, the first so-called faithless elector popped up in Maine, a state Hillary Clinton won, to switch his vote to Bernie Sanders. One Texas elector pledged to Mr. Trump said he would vote for Ohio Governor John Kasich. Kasich himself, however, encouraged all 18 of the Buckeye State's electors to cast their votes for the governor's former rival from the GOP primary.
It's an important responsibility. And as we cast our vote today for the president-elect, Donald Trump, then sometime in January, we will have an inauguration and we'll have a new president.
Former President Bill Clinton, no stranger to the Electoral College, cast a vote for his wife as an elector from New York. Democratic electors in Colorado, another state Mrs. Clinton won, employed litigation tactics up to the very end to become unbound from voting for her, as state law requires. Their gambit was part of a convoluted plan to lure pro-Trump electors in other states into defecting. All 9 of the Centennial State's Electoral College votes went for the Democratic nominee, even after one elector voted against Mrs. Clinton, only to be replaced by another who voted for her.
This has been a vast exploration in sour grapes. The Democrats lost this election because Hillary Clinton was a flawed candidate who failed to campaign effectively in the states that mattered.
In Washington state, 3 electors bound to vote for Mrs. Clinton instead voted for Colin Powell, a 4th for a Native American elder named Faith Spotted Eagle. The state's Republican Secretary of State said she will work with its Democratic Attorney General to see that the four faithless electors are each fined, as state law provides, up to $1,000, Brett.
Faith Spotted Eagle. James, thank you.
Faith the Spotted Eagle. I'm sure Faith the Spotted Eagle would be a better choice than Hillary, who can barely walk, although she's apparently taking hikes into the forest. And then women are going. This is how, what a complete joke Hillary's candidacy was. Women are going to the college, or the forest where Hillary has been spotted like a spotted owl. To speaking of bird brains, and they're hoping that they run into her so that they can have a moment with their hero. And isn't that nice? All right, let's. I think I might have a clip of the spotted eagle being. Here we go. That's it. Okay, I got it. Here is the voting for of Washington State's 12 electors. Casting votes other than for someone other than Hillary, including a bird.
All right, for the office of President of the United States, Hillary Clinton received 8 votes, Colin Powell received 3 votes, and Faith Spotted Eagle received 1 vote. For the office of Vice President of the United States, Tim Kaine received 8 votes, Elizabeth Warren received 1 vote, Susan Collins received 1 vote, Maria Cantwell received 1 vote, and Winona LaDuke received 1 vote.
You see how leftism brings idiocy into whatever it touches, far leftism. All right, folks, a little Christmas music for you. 6:18 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450. You're listening to the Kelly O'Connell Show on KOBE 523-1450 to call in. And 805-61802 text. We'll do a little bit more Electoral College stuff, and then I want to jump into this story about this story that I was telling you about, which is these teams getting suspended and Title IX being totally misused. And think about this. If it wasn't for the Donald, we wouldn't even be talking about this stuff. We would be suffering under yet another year of untrammeled, unmitigated political correctness. Thank God. We'll be right back at 6:19. So we've got Trump, who is now in. And what did the left gain by pretending they could stop the Electoral College? I'm just curious. I mean, I don't know what they thought was going to happen. Did you really think you were going to shut down the vote of 100 million or more people? Can't remember. It's 200 million, isn't it? Can't remember the exact number of the people who voted, but this was totally ridiculous. I've got a little clip here from Tucker Carlson, who's suddenly become my newest favorite commentator, because he's very, very polite to people. He's very polite, but at the same time, he nails. I have seen him nail people, and he'll bring people on his show and ask them questions, and they demagogue, and they rope-a-dope, and they tread water, and they do everything they can to not answer the question. He just nails them. But here he is commenting on the fact that Democrats trying to flip Republican electors because they don't believe in democracy.
point. Tucker Carlson joins us. He is actually reporting for work 11 hours before his show. Feel free to rifle through Brett Baer's personal effects in his desk.
I have been.
I no doubt it. Hey, Tucker, today is D-Day. The Electoral College is going to meet today midday all across the country. This is the last chance for the sore losers on the left to steal the election, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it looks unlikely to happen, though. This is the 1 year, I would say, where you don't really know the outcome. And we're not going to know. I think the results are certified on January 6th. That'll be the day that we're certain. But what it says about the attitudes on the left is what is fascinating to me. So the electors, we can argue about Hamilton's intent or whatever, mm-hmm. but Article 2 of the Constitution is pretty clear. They're supposed to show up and vote. There's no mention of voting your conscience. And so for my lifetime, the left has made a pretty strong case in favor of democracy, you know, empowering people to choose their government. It's basic American understanding of how the government's supposed to work. They're making the opposite case now. Mm-hmm. They're basically saying it doesn't matter that 62 million people voted for Trump. It doesn't matter that we just had an election. It's immaterial.
Right.
37 Republican electors should switch their votes. Those 37 people should choose the next president. They don't believe in democracy. And I would say it's not just the left either. You saw the Republicans acting in a pretty similar way after Trump got the nomination. We're going to take it from him at the convention. It's a crisis when the people running your democracy don't believe in democracy, and it makes your country unstable.
Mm-hmm. Tucker, how much of this, though, is about democracy, and how much of it is about a concerted effort to discredit out the gates, delegitimize
right.
Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, it's whatever it takes. I mean, of course. I mean, they're arguing two things simultaneously. The Democrats are arguing, well, the electors should vote their conscience, act in a moral way, and choose the next president. And they're also, at the same time, arguing the Electoral College shouldn't exist. Because it's not democratic. So they're sort of arguing against themselves. You know, whatever achieving power takes is what they're willing to do, because it's not about ideas. It's about control. But I do think it's a macro problem that the people in charge of the democracy just don't believe people should be choosing their own government. They don't.
Yeah. And they clearly increasingly do not believe in federalism either. They want to have basically not the states have its vote and the people there take its vote. But a lot of folks on the left are saying, you know, there's still hope for this. Let's listen to a group of them right now.
Anti-Trump protesters are still hoping for one last chance to stop him.
It seems that people are still holding out hope that the Electoral College, when they vote tomorrow, will somehow miraculously decide that Hillary Clinton is the winner.
When the Founding Fathers created the Electoral College, they put it in place as a failsafe against a demagogue like Donald Trump. So the electors could be doing their patriotic duty on Monday by voting against Trump.
The Electoral College is not a rubber stamp in many states. You do have to think about your vote.
If I were an elector and I were going to the polls tomorrow, I would want to know if the next president of the United States colluded with a foreign hostile power.
Rob Reiner, former meathead on All in the Family.
To affect our democracy.
There's a hope. There's a glimmer of hope on the Constitution. Alexander Hamilton.
There's a glimmer, Tucker.
Well, I mean, what would happen if the electors took it away from Donald Trump? Mm-hmm. If the message coming out of January 6th, the certification day, was we don't care about you, your votes, the American public. This whole system was a sham. It really is an oligarchy. A small number of influential people run everything. Be quiet and obey. You would have massive unrest, not because Trump voters are violent or crazy, but because the entire population of the United States would know they have no role in running their government. I mean, the only reason this is a stable country is because democracy is the pressure relief valve. People feel like, I'm not going to burn it down. I'll just vote. If they think voting doesn't work, things fall apart. This is crazy behavior, actually.
It is crazy. And, you know, we've told stories on this program and on your program as well about how these electors are being threatened. They're receiving tens of thousands of email, snail mail, death threats.
All right. So that's over. But it's the idea behind the idea behind this. And I mean, democracy, you know. So if you see what the Electoral College was meant to avoid, which is mob rule, and you can see the mobs, and they're not conservative mobs marching around. All right, let's come back. I'm trying to see if there's anything else that I've got in here. I've got a whole bunch of stuff on the Electoral College, but I think that, well, here's one more. Let me play this one last one for you. Ash Carr is this guy's name, and he's a Republican elector, and he's saying protesters have been lied to, told if they raise hell, they will get what they want. That's leftism in a nutshell. The idea that all good things come from revolution.
In Republican politics since 1981, when I became U.S. citizen, November 13th, Friday, 1981.
Wonderful. So you have a
lot. I'm a grassroots activist. I am not looking for a job with Trump administration. I just do my thing. I make things happen. And I move on to the next election, which will be the judge's election coming up next year.
Wonderful. Have you been trying to be an elector for a long time, obviously?
No, I've been an elector since 1996.
Okay.
But I have never been asked to do anything because we never won since 1988.
Exactly.
And tell me, were you a Trump supporter in the primary?
Yes.
And what was it about Donald Trump that drew you to him?
I just told the other television station, there are two things in life. One kind of things that offend you, and one kind of things that affect you. Hillary Clinton was involved in things that offend people. She was, her television commercial said, Trump said this, Trump said this, Trump said this. While Donald Trump was talking about issues that affect the people, the jobs, the illegal immigrants, he talked about the tax rate, he talked about the current state of the economy and foreign affairs. Look at it. We are at the bottom of the pile. Nobody cares. You know, we have made Putin a hero, we, the United States, by saying that he interfered in our election. Putin is walking around Russia with a big chest saying, wow, look at that. I made America feel miserable.
Are you concerned at all that Donald Trump had, for example, encouraged Russian hacking?
No. That was all campaign rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Just remember one thing. The day before WikiLeaks, October 5th, Hillary Clinton was at 48%. At the end of the election, November 8th, Hillary Clinton was 48.8%. So what did the Russian hacking do? You know what I asked the question? Why aren't people saying to John Podesta, why did you write stupid emails? Why aren't people asking Donna Brazile, why did you do dumb things like giving questions to Hillary? Why aren't people saying to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, in addition to being taken out as DNC chairman, why did you favor Clinton to Bernie Sanders? Nobody's asking that question.
Now, what do you think of the protests, the pretty intense protests?
The protesters are nice people.
Mm-hmm.
They have been given the wrong bill of goods that if you go and raise hell and do these things, people will change the mood. They don't understand us. I told people, I received over 70,000 emails. I've received over 5,000 letters. I've received over 500 phone calls at all times of day and night. I told them, I'm not going to change my mind. I received a letter from a 7-year-old child saying, I'm scared of Trump. How can a 7-year-old child be scared of Trump? What does he know about Trump? I received a letter, a phone call from this lady. She says, my father was a Holocaust survivor, and I'm scared. And she's crying. Daddy, what do you want me to do? Don't vote for Trump. Give me a break. Okay? These are the things that are goofy. And, you know, Podesta and the team have to accept the fact that they spent $1.2 billion. They wasted it. Their candidate had a great resume, but never connected with the people. That was the problem. And Trump was connected.
He connected with the people. And now, do you
have... That's, I think, a great point. That's a guy from India, if I can gauge off his accent. And here is a guy that came from India legally, got his citizenship, and is now active in politics at a grassroots level. That is the dream right there. And it is sickening to see this crazy far leftism that is just a little bit unleashed. I mean, can you imagine if these people really had power? Kelly O'Connell, 6:34 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 to call in. And I have your text. Your little text buddy here, 805-6180 to text. And it's about 36 degrees out. We'll be back. And I'm going to get into this whole crazy, let's suspend the team. Somebody said something sexist, which is more crazy political correctness. it is, I mean, I hope we've nipped this stuff in the bud. I am so sick of political correctness. We'll be right back. All right, so bringing up a topic today that is just really kind of mind-boggling, but at the same time is inevitable, is the sudden suspension of a number of different sports teams for sexist comments or behavior. I mean, has anybody here ever been on a sports team? You know, so to me, this is a freedom of speech issue, and I think it's more... I mean, I find political correctness to be absolutely obnoxious, number one. Number two, it's totally hypocritical because the goal is to purify people's thoughts and behaviors, and it doesn't give people – I mean, at the same time, it is just, you know, the political correctness on the one hand claims to have a purity code like the Ten Commandments. At the same time, it celebrates and encourages behaviors, especially sexual behavior, and tries to normalize it with two totally opposite things. So if you want to have a code out there, why would you take the code of a minority number of people? I don't mean a racial minority. I mean a minority belief, true liberals. Why would you want to take their beliefs and force everybody to follow it? Which is what we've done, which is totally crazy. Why not take the majority belief of the Bible? This is something like 70 to 80% of Americans claim to be Christians. Why not take the Bible's standards and force them? If you're going to take something and force it onto people, why not at least do something that the average person believes in at some level, supposedly, right? So why would you take an alien set of theories, turn them, you know, use the university system to cook them up, then get the media. I mean, the media is totally hypocritical, right? They're demanding that we be disarmed, no more guns because of the violence out of there. What's the number one product Hollywood sells? Violence. So if you're going to take let one small group of people decide what everybody has to agree to and follow in public, and if you're going to take those people when they step out of line and either remove them from society or send them to re-education camps of some kind, sensitivity training or whatever it's called, why not use the Bible? Because the Bible is, in theory, supported by 70 to 80% of the people. That's what they claim anyway. Use that. I mean, if you're going to try to force everybody to toe the line, why not at least do it out of a set of ideas that the average person has bought into at some level, supposedly. I mean, I'm not claiming to know what 70% of the people actually believe, but, you know, when people fill out a questionnaire, that's what they say. I'm Catholic. I'm Protestant. And, you know, use that to harass people with. What, you know, why not? Why should you take something that because that's a denial of free speech, isn't it? Freedom of religion, freedom of belief, freedom of speech. You're going to, all right, so that's all the background to this. Title IX is bureaucratic sex creep. Now, Title IX is from the U.S. Code. No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be not denied the benefits of, or be subject to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. That's all it says. But this has ended up, according to the Harvard Law School professors Jacob Gerson and Jeannie Suk, S-U-K, they have called it a bureaucratic sex creep in which colleges allegedly to ensure compliance with Title IX's non-discrimination mandate, micromanage the sex lives of students and subject them to Orwellian levels of surveillance, investigation, and supervision. In essence, students now risk being kicked out of school for not getting express consent for every sexual act, all based on a law that was intended four decades ago to end discrimination in college athletics. So this is much broader already, right? So you've got all of these codes out there being promulgated, and a lot of this is tapping into Title IX, but it is also bigger than that. But I think I think that an emblem or a symbol of this is the cancellation of athletic programs. So you're on the one hand going to have the most perverted country in history with all the pornography, and anybody can do anything with anyone that they want to, you know, except for kids. There's still a few lines out there, although those are being eroded. And you're going to, at the same time, come in and say, this is what's right and it's wrong. You can sleep with whoever you want. You can commit adultery. You can spend your life doing one-night stands, spreading social diseases, whatever, however you want to describe it, be in the porn industry and get up and beat your chest. The women beat their chests and talk about what feminists they are. But you cannot violate the speech code that the political correctness has put out there. If you do, you're going to be removed from society. So who's calling the shots here? How is it possible that we let this herd of clowns take our society over? It's the craziest, saddest thing I've ever seen. All right, take a little break here, and I'm going to come back and get into these sports teams that have been shut down. Somebody made a sexist remark. They're being shut down. OMG. 646, Kelly O'Connell, AM Luscious, is AM 1450. 523-1450 to call in. You're listening to KOBE, and the text line is 805-6180. We're going to get in next hour to what's going on in Europe, this Muslim attack from this guy that was shot at this art exhibit. But I want to just finish up here. All right. You take Title IX that asked to stop discrimination at universities or any program that gets government funding. And then you take political correctness and you bring these two things together. What do you end up with? Washington University St. Louis men's soccer indefinitely suspended. They've been suspended for sexually explicit comments and other inappropriate behavior towards the women's soccer team. And from an online document from 2015, degrading and explicit. And Harvard University men's soccer team, some of their Columbia wrestling team and Princeton University men's swimming team were all suspended. So what direction is the country headed in if we do this stuff? What is the standard? Here's about Columbia wrestling team.
An Ivy League university suspended their men's wrestling team due to the discovery of misogynistic and homophobic text messages between team members. Columbia University made the decision after a student news website, BWOG, published the text dating back to 2014. The athletic department said to the New York Times, "We have decided that Columbia wrestlers will not compete until we have a full understanding of the facts on which to base the official response to this disturbing matter." The team continued to practice on Monday and is scheduled to compete at Cornell on Sunday.
That's from November 24th. Now, you're telling me that two people can't exchange, two members of an athletic team can't exchange texts with privacy? You're joking, right? Here's Princeton.
On Thursday night, Princeton University announced it has suspended its swimming and diving team for the rest of the season after discovering vulgar and offensive material posted by the team. The decision to suspend the team occurred after school officials received an anonymous complaint regarding the materials. The director of athletics stated, "The behavior that we have learned about is simply unacceptable. It is antithetical to the values of our athletic program and of the university and will not be tolerated." The university spokesperson said the comments regarded members of the women's swimming and diving team.
Right, so there's no freedom of speech, right? No freedom of belief in these places. Amherst cross country team, here's another one.
This is a spoken edition of the Huffington Post. Yet another chain of sexist emails from a college sports team has leaked, this time from the men's cross country team at Amherst College in Massachusetts. On Sunday, Amherst student magazine, The Indicator, published an unsettling article featuring excerpts from multiple email chains written by members of the men's cross-country team. The emails contained misogynistic, racist, and generally lewd comments about women on campus. Hours later, the school issued a statement that they would be investigating the emails and that in the interim, the men's cross-country team would be suspended from all team activities. The content of the emails ranged from discussion of female students' bodies to talk of sexual harassment and even rumored use of roofies.
All right, so you're telling me that none of these students have the right to privacy. None of these students are allowed to communicate to one another without having a member, some other person in the university say, this is what these people were texting. You realize how far this has gotten? You can't, there's no privacy in emails. There's no privacy in texts. You can't be serious, to quote Frankie.
I heard about
here's Harvard.
Their comments about the women from the women's soccer team, that it was about their appearance and also some sexually explicit comments about the women. I wasn't pleased. I've experienced harassment in my life, and it's not anything new, but it's also not what I expected at Harvard. These students love their sport, and it is a severe punishment for them not to be able to play. But it sends a message that this behavior won't be tolerated. Violence against women will not be tolerated. Degrading comments will not be tolerated. And it seems like we could take that for granted, but I think, and I'm going to get political, during this election, when a candidate is talking about grabbing women by the genitals, we can't take for granted that this is unacceptable behavior. The message needs to be sent, and Harvard has sent the message.
I think that this is a terrible tradition that the soccer team had, and I think the only way to stop this from happening in the future, both with the soccer team and with other teams, is for the athletic department to take really strong action like this.
That's a cuck, by the way. It's a guy that is a feminist who gets up to apologize for men. So you're telling me that when people are texting on their phones, they don't have any privacy. So there's no right to privacy. I mean, there's a right to privacy so you can have an abortion. But there's no right to privacy. You realize that that's what the abortion law is based on, right? A right to privacy. So there's no right to privacy. There's no right to belief. There's no right to, people, according to this, do not have a right to make sexist comments. Now, who's going to define what a sexist comment is? I mean, if one of these guys texted to another guy, women belong in the kitchen, would they kick him out of school for that? So if you're going to impose a national standard and use the U.S. government to do so, why not impose the standard of no sex before marriage? Why not use the Bible? If you want to make it fun, take the Old Testament and take the laws out of Leviticus and don't allow people to have eat shellfish or pork like they do in Muslim countries. I mean, if you're going to do this, why not do it right? Why not take the mass belief of the average person and force it on everybody? I mean, because that's what we're doing. We're taking the beliefs of a very small number of people, pretending that these beliefs came off of Mount Sinai and have to be followed, and then we punish everybody who strays out of it, even going into their emails and texts. Isn't that wrong? Aren't you worried? Well, you know what? I think that's why Donald Trump got elected, because love him or hate him, he's the one person that we've seen in the last 10 or 20 years who's actually stood up against this garbage and was unafraid. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, on another OMG moment. 523-1450 to call in at 6:59. It's about 36 degrees outside on the 20th of December. If you haven't bought those Christmas gifts yet, give it up. It's too late. Start planning for next year. We'll be right back after a break on the hour. All right, so got some headlines for you. And from the Drudge Report, blood on her hands, Berlin Market Massacre, ex-Nazi airport becomes refugee camp. End quotation, this is war. Now, Angela Merkel, the idiot leader of Germany, who acts like she's smarter than the greatest philosophers in history, by bringing in 1 million Muslim refugees in 1 year and forcing them on her country. She did not do it. Like, none of these people believe in, you know, one way you can tell a far lefty, they don't believe in democracy. They'll use democracy to get into office, and then they'll decision make outside of the popular will. What we call popular sovereignty, one of the greatest achievements in history. And I was talking to somebody the other day. I've been reading a book by a guy by the name of Scherer, and I was looking at the title page, and I noticed somebody had written a date that was almost 100 years ago. So it's kind of an old book, and 1916 something, I think it was March or something, but kind of an old book, and I was reading it. It's on the institutions of ancient Israel. And I was reading in there, one of the things that caught my eye that kind of fascinated me is this guy was arguing this. I think it was J.B. Scherer, S-H-E-A-R-E-R. He was stating that as far as we can tell, all of the decisions that were made in ancient Israel were done with some level of democratic involvement, believe it or not. So they would take votes on various things. Now, when the Constitution was put together, Madison had studied all of the government types in the history of the world and had decided that the style of government by the ancient Israelis, or the ancient Jews, I should say, was the most effective one. And that's where our idea of federalism comes from, in part anyway. But I was kind of fascinated. And so by this idea that there was allowed within the political context, there was decision making that was influenced or highly affected by a vote. And, you know, this is not common in the ancient world. I mean, democracy as we understand it starts with America. Although there were elements of democracy in ancient Greece and ancient Rome, but the ancient world itself, that in Greece and Rome is the classical world, what they refer to as that. In the ancient pagan world, in which the classical world is pagan, but generally speaking, in the ancient world, there was no democracy. So I was kind of fascinated that the ancient Jews had this. And then the thing that John Locke is the writer who perhaps had the most influence on the founding fathers and on the form of government in America. For example, John Locke is basically the father of constitutionalism. Now, like a lot of these writers, a lot of times don't come up with ideas. They popularize ideas. They're, you know, these people are readers and they're involved with other thinkers. And so they come up with something, but an idea that was circulating around that time that John Locke was around, which was, I think John Locke was born in the late 15. So he was born in the 17th century. I have to look that up here, but it was during the time that a lot of stuff was going on in Europe and England. And so he's associated with constitutionalism, and constitutionalism comes out of this idea called the rule of law, that we have both of these ideas. But there's nothing more important in John Locke's writing than the idea of consent, which is kind of fascinating. So our American style of government is based on consent. And John Locke is born in 1632 in Rington, I think. Somerset, England, probably not too far from London. And he dies in 1704, but John Locke had been involved in the drafting of a constitution for the Carolinas. So anyway, this idea of consent is so essential to government. And it's so essential for a happy populace. If the government is continually making decisions that are outside of the popular consent, there's going to be a broad sense that the country is, that the leadership is disconnected, that they are elite in their thinking because they are by definition a small group of people that are controlling others, and that they're on the wrong path. That is going to be a felt sense. What do we have in America today? We have a group of people leading the country who make decisions, regularly make decisions that are disconnected from the popular will. And according to Locke, immoral to do. It is wrong to do. It's also on a practical level, it's a bad political strategy because it breeds discontent and dissent. And so what have we seen from the last 8 years since Obama's been in office is the continual projection of the idea that I'm smarter than you and my decisions are better than yours. If you disagree with me, you're wrong. And so the Democrats have lost something like over 1,000 seats. So there's something like 8,500, 9,000, whatever it is, elected positions in America. Obviously, there's a lot more than that if you count everything up. But in these national posts and state posts, they've lost over 1,000 seats. So what does that lead to? The obvious conclusion is that people are not happy with that style of leadership. And so, especially at the states, there's been a decimation. There has been a huge slump of the Democratic Party. And as time has gone on, they've become farther to the left, which means more into autocracy, more into tyranny, or some variation of tyranny, which is tyranny is just tyranny doesn't have to be bloody. It doesn't have to be murderous, but tyranny is leadership without involvement from the populace. You know, it's the rule of a tyrant, a person who is trying to lead on their own. So that's a bad decision to make. It has been a disaster for the Democrats. And so what is this? What am I blabbing about? What is it connected to? I'm looking at Angela Merkel, who comes into the, and these people tend to have a similar disposition. I'm talking about the decision making in Germany, in which she decided against the will of the people to bring in over 1 million Muslims. And now during 1 year, that 1 year they're open up the gates. Why? Because I guess she's from Eastern Germany. Her family is. Her father was a minister, and she's going to practice her pseudo-Christian faith by bringing a whole bunch of refugees in and maybe make up for the Nazis and for the communists or whatever. Whatever is in this lady's mind is totally inconsistent with good leadership. How many attacks is it going to take before these people come to grips with the idea that you cannot bring in massive amounts of individuals who totally disagree with you on every level on what is good government, what should be legal, and who have no practical experience in democracy? How many of these people are going to be brought in before there's a total disaster, and then the Angela Merkels are going to end up saying, I made a mistake? She is a fool to do that. And the worst part of it is she did it against the population's desires. Very foolish, but she's got the same mindset as Obama. Obama has brought in literally as many Muslims from foreign countries as he possibly could, and has tried to shut down the border wall and just bring as many illegals in also from the south. And these people think that they are better than you, and they think that they're better than me. And it is a recipe only for disaster. Now, here's a little bit on the Berlin Christmas market attack from CBS.
This is a CBS News special report. I'm Scott Pelley at CBS News headquarters in New York. A truck has rammed into a Christmas market in Berlin, Germany this evening. At least 9 people have been killed. There are many injured. The crash is eerily similar to the deadly terrorist attack in Nice, France, last July. Charlie Daggett is in London following this for us. Charlie, what do you know?
Oh, Scott, witnesses described how the 18-wheeler jumped the curb, barreled into the crowd, and it just kept going. They said there's no doubt this was deliberate. Our reports in Germany say a suspect thought to be the driver has been arrested. We caution these are early reports. The story is still developing. Videos posted on social media captured the first images of the aftermath. You see parts of the crowded Christmas market in West Berlin. It's popular with locals and tourists alike, just flattened. Market stalls were crushed. U.S. intelligence officials tell CBS News what happened bears similarities to that attack, you said, in Nice, France, in July, where 86 people were killed, and it's what terror groups have been calling for. Scott?
Charlie Daggett with the very latest information for us from our London office as we are watching these pictures from Berlin. Repeating now, there are at least 9 dead, but that number is very likely to change. The police tell us that many dozens of people have been injured, some severely. This coming, of course, on the same day today that a Russian ambassador, the Russian ambassador to Turkey, was assassinated during a museum opening in Ankara, Turkey. That was a little bit earlier today, assassinated by a Turkish man who said that he was protesting Russian involvement in Syria. There will be a great deal more on your local news on this CBS station, on our streaming network, CBSN. And, of course, we'll have a full report right here on the CBS Evening News.
All right. So I've got a little clip here from Angela Merkel, and she's talking about what a difficult day is.
This act head off.
All right, so here's what she says. Bad leadership leads to bad things. Any state, any country, any society can experience a crisis that has nothing to do with leadership, but bad leadership always brings crises as part of its leadership, and that's Angela Merkel.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said the deadly attack on a Christmas market in Berlin was likely a terrorist act. In a televised news conference, she said that the crime would be clarified and punished with the full strength of the law. Though the nationality of the suspect was not confirmed, she said, I know it would be particularly hard for us to tolerate if it was confirmed that the person who committed this act had asked for protection and asylum in Germany. This would be particularly repugnant towards all those Germans who day in and day out work to help refugees and towards all those people who really need our protection. Announcing that she would visit the site of the attack later in the day, she said, "We don't want to live with the fear of evil paralyzing us."
If they didn't want to live with the fear of evil, why did they bring all these people in there? I mean, you can say that that's a sexist or a racist or whatever. I mean, is it racial to say we shouldn't bring these people in here? Is it anti-religion? Is it, you know, this idea that has been injected into the society by the current powers that be, the elites, that all U.S. all world persons are U.S. citizens in waiting is an extraordinarily harmful idea. And it is a stupid idea that leads to disaster. And are we going to do something about this? Well, we might now that Trump is coming in. Let's take a break, 523-1450, to call in 805-6180 to text. And you're listening to KOBE.